Hello, brothers and sisters. Hearing a lot of experienced people over the last few days talk about how nervous they are makes me feel in good company. But also maybe it says something about how important it is, the task of talking about these issues. Considering the fact that this whole conference is devoted to Malcolm X, like Jen, want to say a little bit about Malcolm in terms of workers. And we don't find too much in the literature about that. We heard a practical kind of experience, but some of these progressive scholars needs to get on that. You know, what did Malcolm say, what did he do in terms of workers? I just did a little fishing around, and it appears that in 1962, hospital workers, again, mainly black, mainly women, were organizing New York Hospital, I guess Bethel and Manhattan Iron Ear, 1199. And they were involved in a very deep struggle. In fact, I guess Leon Davis ended up going to jail. Malcolm supported it. He came to the rally after they had won the contract. A. Philip Randolph was there, Roy Wilkins. And can you imagine Malcolm X showed up at the rally, one of the keynote speakers. And in terms of Leon Davis being willing to go to jail in this strike, Malcolm said, if you're not willing to take the risk, then you don't need the rewards or the benefits that go with it. And this was his attitude. Also, I understand that when Downstate Medical Center was being built, again back in the 60s, struggle for black construction workers, Malcolm X was on the picket line again, struggling with black workers. And you're almost tempted to hunch that oftentimes a lot of these folks who do this kind of history, they obscure this, maybe for philosophical reasons and a little class bias. They don't want to locate Malcolm X or even Martin Luther King in a particular place, in a particular time, supporting black workers. And we need to do something about that. Malcolm certainly had examined the plight of black workers prior to World War II. He observed how they were mainly confined to service jobs, such as waiters, no matter how educated they were. Factory jobs were hard to come by in Detroit. Brother Baker knows that in those years. But textiles in North Carolina, same thing. Blacks couldn't get into factory jobs until later on in the 50s and 60s with the advent of the Civil Rights Movement. And Malcolm said this about it, quote, when times got tough and there was a manpower shortage then, they let us in the factory. Not through any effort of our own, not through any sudden moral awakening on their part. Yes, it was pressure from the outside at the world level that enabled you and me to make steps forward, end quote. Malcolm brilliantly summed up the particular relationship to the means of production and identified the process that is taking place today, but in reverse. They don't need us anymore. Even after his departure from the Nation of Islam, Malcolm talked about owning businesses and controlling the community, but that strategy got less and less attention as the months went by. The program and organization African American Unity had a brief section on economic development, and it primarily dealt with a skills bank of African American workers who might assist brothers and sisters on the continent of Africa. The specifics of the organization's program was left to the Economic Development Committee. I think it's safe to say that the eventual product, though, would not have reflected the naive obsession that many current leaders today have with entrepreneurship as a strategy for liberation. In searching for ways to identify this whole topic of economic barbarism that the conference organizers talked about, I think it's essential to understand the position and character of those most affected by the ravages of capitalism and imperialism. In this context, the question of race versus class does become an issue. And it's also in this context that the role of the black working class emerges not simply as an ideological category, but as a practical question. And it's a question of who needs it, who wants, and who moves on social transformation. It's not an ideological question. We put behind us some of the chauvinist arguments of the early 19th century socialists who would only see the problems of class facing black workers. And we have put behind us the well-intentioned but immature assumptions of young African-American Marxists that dismiss the impact of race and nationality on the position of black workers. So in 1990, I think we're prepared to go forward understanding this relationship of class and race, and understand how race can exist by itself without the initial justification. It has a life of its own. But we must also understand the marginalization of black workers and the impact that it's having on them. And of course, yes, we share the problems with white workers in the auto industry and other industries as well. But because we are segmented into the secondary and marginalized sectors of working class, we are subject more often and more intensely to the cyclical crisis of capitalism. Black workers as early as 1982 were marginalized at a rate of 27% versus white workers who at 14.6%. These conditions cast us in the role as the most desperate members of the working class. We could call them social dynamite. The role also makes us natural leaders in the working class, but we have the difficult task of countering white supremacy. This leadership role can also be found in the Black Liberation Movement, but we'll say more on that later. And incidentally, it's unique to point this out, that in this time of neoconservative black writers, from this guy Wilson and all these other people that are out there today, that the black conservatives now are taking up this question of class. They don't think race is important anymore. So they say that the poverty of black workers has something to do with class now, because they're at the low end of the working class, you know. But with some skills and some training, they'll be able to bring themselves out. But it ain't about them being black. It's about them being workers. This is coming from the right wing. With this class stratification intensifying, though, we do ask this question: is there a class war in the black community? Clearly, the new black middle class and bourgeoisie have moved to agendas that are different from, if not in conflict with the black working class. In the main, the black working class does not hold the black middle class responsible for their plight. If they don't think it's the system, they at least know that white folks are responsible for it, not the black middle class. The age-old dichotomy between field Negroes and grassroots and the masses is still there. Facing the Uncle Toms and the house Negroes is still there. And nonviolence and self-defense and sure enough challenges to imperialism continue to characterize the class divisions. But the contradictions are not antagonistic. They are not antagonistic. And black middle class should not be targeted as the main enemy. But somebody else knows about the enemy, and I want to refer to the ruling class perception. There was a 1978 secret document that came out, State Department, Zbigniew Brzezinski laid out the Carter administration's position at that time. And they saw the links between the black liberation movement here and the radicalization of the Southern African movement. And they felt that it would have an impact, okay? Saw a similar effect. I just want to raise at least 2 points. One, they said that there's a sharp social stratification of the black population and a lack of policy options which unite them. And that was true. That was true. But what they said, which was more stunning, was to take every possible measure through the AFL-CIO leaders to counteract the increasing influence of black labor organizations which function in all major unions, in particular the National Coalition of Black Trade Unionists and its leadership, including the creation of preconditions for adverse and hostile reaction among white trade unionists to demands for improvement of social and economic welfare of blacks. There it is. There it is. They knew it, but do we know? It's been pointed out by Sister Nsia that 85% of our people go to work every day. They go to work. And this whole question of an expanding middle class and whatnot, while not entirely mythical, doesn't represent the entire African-American community. And we've got to understand that as we develop programs. With numbers this large and with conditions so bad, their demands must take a priority. And clearly their readership and their rage, I think, will characterize the decade of the 1990s. But living and struggling within a broader movement of classes, black workers must participate in a united front. I say it again, we must be in a united front. However, in this front, black workers' leadership, for all these reasons that we've talked about, must be seen by the masses and not declared. Not declared. We shouldn't march into the popular organizations of our people and declare that we are the leadership and not y'all. We come with the correct line. This was the problem. We do not march into those organizations and declare our leadership. This was the problem in the 1980s with the Black United Front. Workers who claimed to represent the interests of workers, in fact, represented very few, and they had no base. And that is one of the reasons that today the Black United Front lacks a black working class perspective. We fail, brothers and sisters, we fail. We got to make up for it, and we got to make up quick. Our work and our struggles are going to determine who leads this movement in the community. And part of this work includes making workers' issues at the workplace community issues. There's too much separation now. We must be part of the total agenda for black liberation. Problems of hospital workers and poultry workers, transit workers, they got to be linked to police terror, to racial violence, to bad education, and to bad housing. They're part of the same agenda. Black communities must once again develop a labor consciousness. All over the country, people are talking about Afrocentrism and an Afrocentric outlook and a black way of thinking. And this is good, but it's got to be accompanied by a black working class perspective. It's important to understand our relationship to Africa, and that's been said since Thursday night. We've got to understand that. But we also got to understand our relationship to production, to the economy. And without this, changing in people's thinking will not be accompanied by changes in their lives. Many organizations in the black community now are putting forth agendas for economic development. And most of them are based on black capitalism and entrepreneurship. The task for us, I think, is that when they raise these things, we've got to raise the demands of black workers. We've got to make it clear that without decent wages, that all of these small businesses and enterprises, they won't be viable. They won't survive. They need the wages of black workers. And the same applies to the churches and other institutions in the communities that depend on black workers for support. But then, we can't limit our views to workplace issues too, and I mean from the point of view of the union. We can't do that. We've got to bring our unions and workers' committees into the struggles in the communities, and it's not always easy. But without it, no true unity can be forged with the working class in this country. Workers of other nationalities must take up the fight for freedom, justice, and equality. They must be brought into this fight for self-determination. When the community sees the support, they will be more willing to participate in the alliance with labor. And without it, we remain, as Sister Anthea said earlier, the unions are just one more racist institution that got some black folks in it. What Brzezinski said in 78 is even more apparent today. When we consider that the trade union movement has in its ranks now veterans of the various movements and organizations of black liberation. And that's real important to understand that. These are Sheffields and whatnot, they don't hold a day in the trade union movement anymore. And add to that, the young militant workers that are out there today that are at this conference fired up by the spirit of Malcolm X, fired up by Boogie Down Productions, Public Enemy and whatnot. This is an important group in the people. And we think that they're going to be part of this new upsurge. Together, they can shape and redirect the labor movement away from U.S. foreign policy and in the direction of black liberation. Immediately, brothers and sisters, before us is the need to bring the problems of workers before the entire community. We need to struggle for access to the newspapers, not just our newspapers at our various organizations, but community newspapers. I mean, the City Sun and the Amsterdam in New York, in North Carolina, the Carolinian, the Carolina Times, and so on and so forth. We've got to bring the problems of poultry workers and put it on the minds of black people as the problems of the entire people, right? The resistance of Southern capitalists to organizing in the South must become a problem for all black people. The struggle of African American and Latino workers in the mail handlers union for democracy and control of their union by mob-dominated Laborers International must become a problem for the black community. It's not only a struggle for union democracy, it's a struggle against white supremacy. The problems of the oil field workers in Trinidad, and we heard that brother blowing this morning, wasn't he something? The problems of the oil field workers have to become part of the problem of all black people. The problems of South African workers have to become the problems of the entire black community. Last night, my brother Bill Fletcher here talked about this coming together, the left wing and the black liberation movement, the third world movement, a kind of bandung movement. And I think within that, what we need is African-American workers to build networks and organizations, rank and file workers, union leaders, labor organizations. We got to build links. We need a black workers' unity movement. We got to get together, not just the CBTU or the A. Philip Randolph Institute. We want them in it, but all black workers need to be in a black workers' unity movement and eventually a black workers' organization. But we've got to extend those links. We've got to look at the international working class so that the oil field workers, they need to be bought in. The South African workers, the Congress of South African Trade Unions, they need to be in our network. The Nigerian workers need to be bought in. The third world workers in general need to be bought in. Brothers and sisters, we need to stay in touch. In the spirit of this conference, we need to unite. And let's lead by example. Let's lead by our action. Let's lead by our work, like Malcolm X. Thank you.